There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Good Friday. And it is it's a tough Good Friday in our battle against coronavirus, but there is the hope eternal with Good Friday and this Easter weekend ahead, even though it's going to be so very, very different. From Easter egg hunts to family coming over, can't do that, to going to church, can't do that. We're all having to adjust to so many things, but I think it's going to be a weekend like this one that has so many traditions associated with it that will really stand out as we look at the changes we're making in our life right now in the fight against the coronavirus. And it's going to be one that hopefully is something that's just a footnote in our history. We look back and go, oh, remember that Easter when we couldn't go to church? Remember that Easter when we couldn't have the whole family over for Easter dinner? Remember that? And hopefully that's something that is put back in the history book, something we just think about, in the rear view. Look at the rear view. All right, coming up on today's show, a bunch of different things and interviews I've been wanting to do and people I've wanted to talk to. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Lee Irvin is going to join us. And if you remember, it was a couple days ago on the morning show that we received a phone call about and I'm going to butcher the name again. I don't have it in front of me. Hydrochloroquine. I'll just call it chloroquine, Dalton, because I mess it up. So the chloroquine and the Z-Pak and this combination of medicines that has been shown in some places, in some trials. I'm not a scientist, but some trials just shown to have some efficacy against the coronavirus. And then we had a call from this doctor who said, yeah, and actually a physician like himself, he's taking it in a prophylactic way. In other words, to oversimplify it for my mind, basically like you take your vitamins to keep from getting other issues, you would take this for people that are on the front lines. He's done a lot of study in this combination of the Z-Pak and the the chloroquine Z-Pak combination. And he's going to join us. And so if you have questions about it, this is going to be your chance starting at 1 o'clock today. Also joining us later this hour, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. We'll talk with him and get some more info on what votes might be taken, what might happen here on another maybe $250 billion in money for the small business loans out there as we watch so many banks saying that, hey, we've been crushed with people asking for these loans. I know we've had a lot of questions here and been talking about it on the show, and we'll talk about what might happen in Washington, and can the Republicans overcome the block from the Democrats and move this money out? So we'll get into that conversation later this hour. Another man I haven't talked to in too long, and I'm interested in talking with him. Of course, he is also a candidate for AL1, and that primary we discussed this morning with Secretary of State John Merrill coming up July 14th. It's Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Sean, great to be on. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, thank you as well, and happy Easter to you and the family. It's going to be a different kind of thing this year, but we'll figure it out.
We're trying to figure out how to hide Easter eggs with our grandchildren. Our granddaughter's broke a bone in her hand, so we're going to do a drive-by tonight just to sign the cast. You know, it's a strange world we're living in right now.
Yeah, it's tough having to be away from family and not being able to be close to folks.
Right.
I want to talk about that with you, too. A couple things now on the county front, and there's so much that I've been talking about as of late, has been on the state level for regulations and shelter in place or stay home order. And then on the city level, I talked to Mobile Mayor Mayor Stimson this morning about the city curfew. What, if any, rules or regulations have you changed, or have y'all changed at the county level to deal with coronavirus? What are y'all doing?
Well, obviously, the state's recommendation that came down, we're enforcing that, which is encouraging everyone to stay at home. Your social distancing, your lack of shopping, everything we can do to really cut back exposure, you know, to other people. We, the county, have not discussed, and I don't think you will see us discuss, a curfew itself. Although the curfews are working in the city, you still have to take in consideration, we still have a workforce out there that has to get to work, the essential jobs. There's some things that apply. So I don't think the county, I mean, I live on Airport Boulevard, and I promise you at 10 o'clock you can't find a car. It is the strangest thing I've ever seen. So people are abiding to this, and we're excited about that. I don't think the county at this point needs to do anything.
Okay. So what about the staff, county employees? Are you just with, I know the sheriff's department, you'd say part of that, but what's your policy right now with the people that work for the county?
Well, we certainly have limited the public from coming into buildings. I mean, you have to make an appointment if you come downtown, for example. And if you come to see me, I have to physically come down and get you and bring you up. So we've just stopped that human flow from coming in and out. We are still running the county itself under the county commission is still running pretty much as normal as you can expect in these times. Now, the other elected officials, they have their rights to do things the way they want to do it. I know the license commission and the revenue commission, they are set up where a lot of theirs can be done from home. So much of theirs is key entry. So they're doing from home. So much of ours, when you talk about engineering and road maintenance, stuff like that, we have to be on site. So we've been very cautious about who they come in contact with. But at the same time, you still need your government performing their normal task.
Yes.
We don't need to shut everything down. We need to see our government officials out and working and being part of the answer.
Well, okay. So let's talk about another part of this, and that is trying to help small business through this, and trying to help business in general through this. And it was a story that I was talking about with the Attorney General, Steve Marshall, coming down and rendering an opinion last week, saying that, and correct me if I get terms wrong here, but economic incentive money couldn't be used. Is that the right term? Couldn't be used to transfer to businesses trying to get through this? I mean,
correct.
Okay, so that's the money.
And we always run a fine line. That's why the industrial board was set up years ago. So we actually give money to the industrial board, which passes the money on industrial projects. When we do it like a Walmart or Amazon or some of these groups that we encourage to come in. So that is how we have gotten around it historically. What we wanted to do on this one was actually give an amount of money to the Chamber of Commerce and allow the Chamber of Commerce to dole that out to the businesses that they felt like needed it. And it would be a flat rate per business. It wouldn't be how much do you actually need and it wouldn't be an ask. I personally wasn't real happy with that particular plan, but I certainly would have supported it. I was in more favor of trying to get money directly to the people that were being laid off. I was looking more to helping the employees themselves. I tried to set up a plan where we could pick up their power bill, their utility bills, because once we do come out of this, whether it's a month or 3 months, you're still going to have several months of utility bills staring you in the face to get caught up on. So mine was more trying to help the end user, which I consider that to be, you know, the taxpayers themselves. But needless to say, the business owners and all of them need help. And so we were all kind of working in different directions. But we really got shut down with that AG's opinion that came through actually day before yesterday, Wednesday. And we just got shut down, and AG's opinion says it cannot be done. Auburn had a real neat one, I thought, was small businesses could take out loans through the local banks, and Auburn, the city of Auburn was going to pick up their interest on the loans up to 3 years, which I found that one to be extremely interesting. But it, everything got shot down with that opinion from Attorney General Steve Marshall.
Now, with that, I mean, you're talking about additional ideas to help out there. And is it because you think the SBA loans or the one-time loans won't be enough, or are they not moving quickly enough for y'all? What's the reason?
It has everything to do with speed. We deal with the federal government every day in some aspect, and I promise you, it gets very, very slow. They may have great intentions, but it never works out that way because there's so many bureaucrats between the money when it leaves Washington and the day that it hits your bank. A good example, the mayor of Tuscaloosa was on a conference call, and he thanked the legislators for helping them during the tornadoes, but they just received the last check, and that was 8 years later.
Wow. So, because I was about to transition into same question I asked Mayor Stimson this morning, is this $1.9 billion, with a B, that could be coming to the state, right, from the feds.
Right.
But that's got to go through Montgomery. What kind of hopes do you have that you see anything at a county level?
Well, I hope we do. I'm not going to hold out very long and spend a lot of time looking at that. When it happens, it happens. I don't look for it to get here quick enough. And that was the whole focus of all three of us commissioners trying to look in different directions and figure out how we could help the community best with what we have. Now, the county itself and the city itself is really going to feel the blunt from this come next December and January. It's really going to start stumbling when we start talking about it. It'll catch up. So there'll have to be some alterations done then. It's a real challenge right now just to keep a workforce out working.
Yes.
Some people it doesn't seem to bother a lot. They feel like they should be compensated more to be out there. I don't argue that. But at some point, place, time, we have to be realistic. We can't just pay people to do stuff that we can put off and postpone.
Well, I mean, a lot of these questions about, this municipality, or this other county somewhere else pays hazard pay, this one doesn't. I mean, you're seeing people say, well, if they're doing it, why doesn't this county do it, or why doesn't this city do it?
Well, I was proud of the county commission the way we jumped out there. We knew our frontline first responders, which would be our sheriff's department, were going to be the ones that we had to keep active. We had to keep them on the front line. We had to show them that we were taking care of them. So we came out with time and a half pay for them. We missed it a little bit. There's some people inside the jail that we should have included in that, and that was brought up in the conversation. But our attitude was, is let's get this battleship moving, and then we'll worry about turning it one direction or the other once it gets moving. Because there's some people on the front line inside the jails, too. If you don't have them, the bad folks don't get locked up and stay locked up. So we missed it a little bit, and you'll see us making some changes. We had a proposal come before us yesterday about cutting that time and a half down to 1.1. I was the only one against it. I think from a morale standpoint, we're really shooting ourselves in the foot by doing that. But, majority rules. So you've got to just, move with it.
So you did not vote for cutting it back?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think these deputies, we've got to keep them happy. The only way we have to motivate them to stay out there is paying them. And that's the direction that we took. This day and age, it's hard to get anyone that wants to go into law enforcement. So when you do get one, you really need to take care of them.
Hey, can you hang on a second? We're going to run
sure.
the news break
sure.
here. Coming right back, more with Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, also a man running in the runoff that, as we heard from the Secretary of State, is going to stay at July 14th. He's running for the AL1 Republican primary runoff. And we want to talk a little bit about that, too, because there's this new angle here for the absentee voting. That, by the way, if you didn't catch it this morning, go back and catch the podcast of our conversation with Secretary of State. But you got till, make sure I get this right, July 9th, I think. Yeah, July 9th to get the absentee forms in. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Talking with Mobile County Commissioner and Commission President. And also, let's talk about campaign right now. As you're in this runoff for the Republican primary for AL1, are y'all, is the campaign still going on? And if it's still going on right now, how does it go on with all the stuff that's happening right now?
Well, the only thing we can do right now is our Facebook stuff. We try to keep our base of people out there that are our base of supporters. We try to keep them active, try to actually find things for them to do and keep them involved. Everyone does have a lot of free time on their hands at home. We have got a pretty intense phone program going right now. We're calling people and just chit-chatting with them. You know, we want to find out how they feel about politics. You know, and believe it or not, most everybody's very receptive. They're glad to have somebody to talk to different. So, but we're just doing the best we can do as far as TV, radio, and I know you've seen from your numbers, everyone's just flat. I mean, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah. Our growth has been interesting, with us just cause the shows we're doing, the way people are interacting with us. But yeah, I think, somebody will send me a text from time to time and say, y'all going to talk about anything other than COVID-19? And I got to tell them honestly, I don't think so. I have a ton of stories that somehow hinge off it, different things, but it's kind of where people's minds are, obviously.
And politics are the same way. People are really not very focused. I think I really see light at the end of the tunnel.
Like timeline or some kind of big turnaround or cases?
It's hard to put a timeline, but I will, just for the sake of conversation.
Okay.
I think around May 1st, we're going to see a huge change in people's attitude. Americans, we're used to jumping in our car and going anywhere we want to. We're used to the freedom of moving around. And you take people in America and you basically lock them in their homes for days on days on days. And we really become very restless. We start seeing the numbers flatline in New York. We've seen Washington. We've seen California. Start watching Mobile and Alabama's numbers. It's the new cases is what you want to look at. I know the deaths are very important, and any death is horrible. But focus on the new cases, because the new cases are going to tell us what we want to know. Have we flatlined? Now, we're behind the other states because we just have gotten set up between the mayor and his staff with the county. I've been working with them, the health department. All of us have been working very diligent. So our numbers should start increasing. We're going to start diagnosing these cases because now we have the means to do it. But I'm a firm believer this has been here for much longer than we think. People have had long histories of colds in December and January. I think it was here. I really do. We have a lot of international travel in and out of Mobile, so we certainly could possibly be a hot spot for that. But with that said, I see the flat line in these places. Most of the news, and this is one thing that Congressman Burns told me, I had a good conversation with him. He said, Jerry, quit focusing on the national news, because the national news are all out of New York and New Jersey. New York and New Jersey, they are in bad, bad shape with this. We are not in as bad a shape as they are. Don't try to put ourselves in the position of being in New York and New Jersey. We are Alabama. We don't have the problems that they're having in New Jersey.
I get it. The problem is I'm such a homer that I care about them because I care about my nation, but I care about us first. Like every case, and this week, it's as I sit here at our console in the studio and I hit the ADPH button, you know, on their dashboard and refresh it yesterday, it was just every time I refreshed it, the number of new cases coming up and coming up. And I realize a lot of that's about testing, but it's more cases that we've identified.
But if we had 35 cases tested yesterday and we have 34 cases today and we have 34 cases tomorrow and then Monday we have 32, that cycle has started back down.
True.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for those new cases that are beginning to either flatline or drop off, because that will determine who's sick and who's going in the hospital. Our hospital rate's extremely low.
Yep.
Compared to why? I think it's because we've got so much fresh air in open conditions down here. And that fresh air and that sunshine will kill most viruses. And I believe it has a lot to do with us being healthier.
So you don't think, and we just have 1 minute left here, but you don't think it has something to do with the fact that we haven't had the number of tests to reveal something more?
There's no doubt about that. 80% of the people that had it don't even know they had it. I mean, if you figure that in, you're going to have a very, very low percentage rate. And I know you've lost a very close friend. I don't mean to make light of that. But you're going to see a very, very low percentage of death from this. Influenza is going to be 2+%. This is going to be less than 1%.
You know what? I hope you're right on that for sure. I hope you're right.
Well, it doesn't make that loss any better, but I'm just saying, you know, at some point, place and time, we Americans got to say enough's enough. Let's get back to normal. Let's go back to work. Let's do what we do.
I think we can balance that seesaw out there, and hopefully it'll come sooner than later. Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, thank you for your time, and
thank you.
We'll talk
and
again.
And again, I'm so sorry for your loss.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Coming right back, we will be joined by AL1's Congressman Bradley Burns, going to join us. A lot to talk about with the response from Washington. One of the questions I have is the debate going on now for another $250 billion into this PPP program, which, by the way, I got a text from somebody here. Milton said he got his first check this week. I'll talk about that when we get back as well. Bradley Burns next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5, and welcome back, Midday Mobile, on this Good Friday. It's going to be some getting used to this weekend, Easter weekend, with social distancing and not being at church, not having the same bunch of folks over for Easter dinner. But we got to negotiate this as we are in the fight against coronavirus. We've been told this week or the next couple of weeks, the peak of this battle for us. We're going to check in with our Congressman, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, to talk more about that and get some perspective from right here at home and in Washington. Thanks for your time.
Great to be with you, Sean. Sorry about Randy. Great guy. Good friend of mine, too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that a whole bunch. I'm going to just say what you and I were, conversation we were having during the news break, and we'll go right into that and then we'll circle back. But I said, you know, we're looking at the numbers for Alabama and the number of cases, and we can talk testing and all that. But I said to you, I said, why, what the heck is going on with Louisiana that's so different? Because you look at their numbers, it has been for a state that has, what, basically the population of Alabama, and they have so many more cases.
Yeah. Well, the what they've been saying is that, well, they had Mardi Gras in the end of February, and you had all those people in from all these other places in New Orleans, and you had a similar thing, not people from all over the place, but a similar thing in Shreveport, okay? So I was on one of these conference calls that we're on, like all the time, with this Dr. Gottlieb, he's the head of FDA, and I said, all right, Mobile has a Mardi Gras at the same time as Shreveport and New Orleans, yet our rates, even within Alabama, aren't, you know, expanding dramatically. So explain that to me. The bottom line was he couldn't. So that's another one of those, and there's lots of things out there. There's lots of unknowns about this disease, and I'm sure years from now, there'll be all these papers and studies written that'll explain all this, but that's just a mystery how Louisiana has such a high rate, and with all the Mardi Gras stuff we have here, and all people standing near one on the streets and hanging out at bars and restaurants and going to balls, we just don't seem to have the breakout here. Now, you and I both know one death is one too many, but we've had 12 deaths in my district. We've had 439 cases in my district. The positive rate in Mobile County is only 18% positive rate when they get tested. Positive rate in Baldwin County is only 7%. It's not, and we're beginning to test, you know, significant numbers of people. I mean, we tested over 1,600 people in Mobile County alone. So we just don't have that breakout yet. Now, they told us this past Monday on a conference call with FEMA and State EMA that we should expect the peak in Alabama. They said 2 weeks on last Monday, so that's a week and a half from now. And we're still not having the breakout in cases that we've been worried about. For example, if you look at what's going on with our hospital usage in Alabama, We have 156 people with this disease in ICUs and 104 in ventilators statewide. So that just doesn't sound like a breakout to me. And
right.
I keep pressing these national public health experts, explain it, and they don't have an explanation because they don't know. And by the way, Sean, you saw that news story on Sunday that Alabama was going to have the highest death rate per capita of any state in the United States of America, that University of Washington study. And 2 days later, they said, nope, they're going to have the 20th high. Like, from the highest to the 20th in 2 days.
Yeah.
They just don't know enough to make these projections that they've been making.
And that's a tough thing, right, Congressman? We're talking the IMHE, or I may have the acronym incorrect, but their big shift on that. I don't know if they're doing it nefariously. I think it's what you're saying. I think it's okay if people would admit we don't know.
Well, if you listen, when we question Dr. Fauci, listen to Dr. Fauci on television, he'll say, we don't know. And I think that's a good, honest response. And I don't mind that. I don't mind an expert telling me, look, we just don't have enough data to know. But for them to take an incomplete set of data and say, okay, based upon the data we have now, Alabama's going to have the most deaths per capita of any state in the nation, they didn't know that. And by the way, we've been paying attention to their numbers for a couple of weeks now. They have been all over the place when it comes to Alabama. But at some point, you've got to say, stop. Listen to your healthcare professionals on the ground in your state. What do you see? How many people are in your bed? How's your emergency room doing? Do you have what you need to get your stuff done? Now, we did get straight with the FEMA people and the state EMA people on Monday that if for some reason, as we get close to our peak, we have a surge, that they'll surge equipment, et cetera, into Alabama. So they're prepared to do that. But right now, for all appropriate reasons, they're focusing the stuff they've got to focus on the places that really need it. If you look at the data in the United States, almost half of all the cases in the United States in the New York metro area, and over half of the deaths are in the New York metro area. So obviously they've got to flow more resources in there to deal with what is the biggest breakout in the world right now.
That will, though, I imagine it's a tough deal, because if you're a governor and you if you're a good person, you want that equipment to flow to the state that needs it most. But at the same time, in the back of your mind, you're like, my job is to my people of this state, and I better keep my stuff right. I want to keep my stuff right here, because if you see what I'm saying, it's like, you know what's right, but you're also tasked with the job of, maybe it's a little jingoistic, but protecting your own.
Well, I'll tell you what the state's done. The state went out, state EMA went out and got 200 ventilators on their own. But when I'm talking about flowing the equipment where it needs to go, this is from the national stockpile. So, we got this this effort where they actually are flying all the stuff in from out of the country into America, the PPE and everything, mm-hmm. Project Airlift. And they bring that in, and half of it goes right into the national stockpile, and then they pull it from there to the places that have the most needs. And the only request I had of them on the phone call Monday was, all right, we don't have the need right now, but they tell us our peak is in 2 weeks. Will we have that equipment? Will it flow into our state if we have the need? They said, absolutely. We work directly with your state EMA. We will have the equipment there when you need it, if you need it.
Okay, that's,
so let's keep praying we don't need it.
Absolutely. But you had that conversation and said, hey, if it's not us right now, and God bless those places, it is flow it there. But if we need it, you will have it for us. They told you they will have it for us.
Absolutely. And the state EMA people confirmed that. So, this is a moving target every day, but I can't ask any more of them for what they committed to on the phone. And I do understand they've got to flow the equipment where the greatest need is, and clearly the New York metro area is where the greatest need. But that's a huge need, Louisiana. And the two new hotspots they're worried about are Philadelphia and the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area. So that's good news for all of us who work serving Congress.
More reason to stay in the district. But we've got y'all, you got work to do up there. What's going on right now? Because I want to get into the money side of this as well. And we'll talk about the economy down here at home. But let's talk about what's going on. People have heard that, okay, there's maybe they're going to run through all the money for the PPP program here. And you heard in the Senate, of course, this discussion of $250 billion more. And then Democrats pushing back on that today. What's going on over there?
Well, let's put all this into context, okay? 5 weeks ago on a Friday, we had the jobs report from February, which was one of the best jobs reports the United States had ever had. Record low unemployment, incredibly strong economy. In 4 weeks, 17 million Americans lost their jobs.
Unreal.
Our daily economic output has fallen 29% during that period of time. A quarter of our economy is idle, okay? So think how abruptly all that happened, just incredibly abruptly. So 2 weeks ago, we passed that CARES Act. You and I've talked about that a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And the centerpiece for most of us was the small business loan program, the PPP program. And they sold that to us, and quite correctly, in saying, look, if we just wait for SBA to get these loans out, it ain't ever going to happen. So what we want to do is make sure that we are flowing it through banks. So we're going to put every FDIC-insured bank in the nation and every credit union into the 7A program, and we're going to guarantee the loans 100%. We're going to let them charge an administrative fee so they get their costs back on it. And then we're going to start pushing this money out there to them to go to small businesses who, if they use it for their payroll expenses, will get it 100% forgiven. You know, pretty good idea. So we passed it 2 weeks ago, and in 1 week, they brought up the guy and started making the loans. So in the first 4 days of this program, they put out, the first 5 days, they put out 400,000 loans totaling $125 billion. In 2019, the entire year of 2019, SBA only made 52,000 loans totaling just $23 billion. So in 4 days, we have dramatically eclipsed what SBA has ever done in a single year. So pushing that much loan volume through an agency that's just not used to doing it has caused some glitches, and we got some glitches. But even with the glitches, think about it, $125 million in 5 days, $125 billion in 5 days. So if we stuck at that rate, we are making $25 billion in loans a day, and in about 10 days, we're going to run out of money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We know that. You can just look at the volume and know that it's going to happen. So the administration, I think quite prudently, said to the Congress, we're going to need another $250 billion because this program is critically important to keeping people in their jobs. And by the way, we already know that just with the loans we've made through yesterday, we've saved 10 million American jobs, okay? I mean, this is a big deal. So pretty straightforward request. Senator McConnell said, all right, let's just do it through unanimous consent in the Senate. And Schumer and Pelosi said, nope, we're not going to agree to that unless you agree to a bunch of money for other stuff. Now, the other stuff is like money to state and local governments and money to health care providers, et cetera. We've already put money in for them into this package. It has only just started flowing. We have no idea whether they're going to run out of that or not. Why hold up the PPP or this other money until we know whether we need it or not? We're not sure we're going to need it. We may. I'm not going to say we're not, but we don't know that. And why would we hold up the PPP to get that straight? It's just them trying to use the leverage so they can go out and try to make some political thing with it. If there ever was a time not to be playing partisan politics, this is it.
All right, coming right back, I want to talk more about the money with Congressman Byrne as well, because I'm seeing your questions here about the one-time checks as well and kind of the time frame. I keep updating y'all, you know, with what I see from the Treasury Secretary, but we have our congressman on, so we'll ask him that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Text lines open at 343-0106, and talking with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, talking about, the Washington portion of this and the AL1 portion of this. And we talked about PPP, and I was, you know, we've got small businesses obviously engaged in this. And you talked about how much money went out through the PPP already?
$125 billion at the end of the day yesterday.
It's obviously significant. And you said it saves how many American jobs?
Through that $125 billion saved 10 million jobs.
It, you know, I look at some companies out there that have had these layoffs and stuff, and I do question, are they not listening to this? Are they not going to wait and, you know, and get that check. I think this is a great method to keep people from going on unemployment. So when I see a company out there do that layoff, I know there's probably they got their reasons. I just don't understand it.
Well, there are some companies that fall through the cracks. I just saw a letter from a lumber company that has over 500 people, and they don't qualify for PPP. So in order to qualify for PPP, they had to lay some people off to get under 500.
Oh, wow. See, the unintended consequence of that.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, you can't make a program that's this big that you want to move very fast. You can't make it perfect, and certainly not perfectly efficient. You're going to have gaps like this. But when you save 10 million jobs in five business days, yeah, you know you're doing something right.
What about the one-time payment, that other portion that the one-time checks for, what is $1,200 for individuals or up to, what, $3,200 for a family?
Yeah, $1,200 for an individual, $2,400 for a couple filing jointly, and an extra $500 for every dependent child. Secretary Mnuchin told us on Tuesday, I think it was, that the first batch of the direct deposits will start a week from today, so next Friday. Now, they weren't not everybody's direct deposit is going to land next Friday because they've got, you know, obviously millions of these things to process. So they're going to go through all of the direct deposits first, and then they'll start sending out the paper checks.
Yeah, so, and the direct deposit, we'll get to paper checks, but the direct deposit, will it be like the paper check? I was reading something that the paper checks would be based on, and they said it could be as late as early September for the last of those checks to come out, because based on the people who have the lowest income first being paid on the paper checks. Is that true on the direct deposit? Is it random, or is there some measure that they're using to decide, you know, what the first batch they put in the account and second, third?
I don't know the answer to that. Direct deposits are a lot easier to do than paper checks, obviously. And the direct deposits, they've already got the information on it for virtually everybody. So it's not like they got to sit around and wait for the information. It's just a matter of processing that many electronic funds transfers for literally millions of people around America. But to his great credit, and I've had my differences with Secretary Mnuchin, but to his great credit, I mean, they have put their foot down on the accelerator on all of this stuff. And so to be able to turn around in basically 3 weeks' time and start sending out this enormous volume and enormous amount of money and these checks are going directly to people, I mean, this is $600 billion worth of checks or a direct deposit. $600 billion.
Wow.
And he's turned it around in 3 weeks, and he's going to process the vast majority of it in just a couple, 3 weeks after that. I mean, that's just remarkable how much money they're pushing into this economy at this speed. Now, be prepared 6 months, a year, or whatever, now folks say, oh, well, you know, there was a mistake here, there was a mistake there. Yeah. You can't push out this much money unless you and avoid having mistakes at some level. Let's understand what we're doing here. We just saved 10 million jobs for what we did in the last 5 business days. I think that shows that something's working here.
It's significant, especially for those jobs that were saved, you know, for those families. It makes a big difference. Let me ask you one more portion of the money. It got in discussion earlier in the week, kind of from a Montgomery aspect, but maybe $1.9 billion coming to the state. How's that going to work? Do you have any insight to that?
Yeah, it comes directly from the federal government to the state, and there's a certain portion the state can keep for itself. And the rest of it, the state has to distribute out to local governments, counties, and municipalities. Only one local government in Alabama qualifies for the direct check, and that's Jefferson County. You have to have at least 500,000 people. So I don't know exactly how much money they're going to get, but whatever they get is subtracted from the overall total sent to the state of Alabama. I did talk to the governor's folks. It's probably been 4 or 5 days ago now, and they were still waiting for federal guidelines before they write their guidelines. So I can't tell you. And I've been asked by a lot of mayors this. I can't tell you exactly how they're going to send that money out.
So it will be up to the executive branch, I guess, to decide like how they score that or something to that effect?
Yeah. I mean, once again, they're trying to push money out as quickly as they can. Instead of coming up with some complicated formula in Washington, they said, look, we're going to send this money out based upon population. If it's for people, for municipalities and counties that don't have 500,000 people, we're just going to let the governors and the individual states figure out what's the right way to do it. But they are giving them some guidelines. It's not like their hands are totally free in how they do it.
All right. Well, we will hopefully check in with you next week for some more updates on this. I know you got to get going for that call, but we appreciate the update, Congressman, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy to do it, Sean. Everybody stay safe. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you as well. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us. And if you didn't catch the whole interview, not to worry, we'll be putting that up on our podcast page. It goes to the regular podcast. If you get our podcast through iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other platforms out there, you'll have that. But also, if you'll go to the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com, go there. A couple things we want you to check out, like our Moon Pie Minute. Go back and listen to our now late friend, Rennie Brabner, and the Moon Pie Minute, the story of Mardi Gras, as only he could tell it. It's up there. But on the top tab, you'll see COVID-19 local news. And what we do there is we take the interviews we're doing that are specific to the economic side of this, the health side of the fight against coronavirus, and put them in one place. So I guess the fancy folks say they're curated at that place. I'm not fancy, so I say we just gather them up, and they're under one tab on our website, fmtalk1065.com. All right, I want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry and talk about what's happening on a Friday. And I got to talk, since we talked last, looking at your eBay presence, man, that is robust.
Yeah, we've got over 9,000 items in our eBay store, and that's helped us out a lot. We can't sell jewelry in the shop right now because of all the closures and shutdowns and things, but we can sell it through that eBay store. So luckily, we've had a lot of people go into that site. That's really helped out quite a bit. And I wanted to let everybody know, too, this hasn't happened in a long time, but we're actually going to be closed the full weekend. We're going to be closed on Saturday.
You're not working Saturday? You're not working Saturday? Man.
I know. I think the last time that happened was about 5 years ago. So I'm sure I'll find something to do with my spare time, Sean.
Well, I do want to talk about, you mentioned the jewelry part of it or just all the other items. Even with all this going on, there are still people having birthdays, still having gift idea, you know, gift necessities. I mean, this is happening whether we're, you know, under a stay-at-home order or not. So people can go shop for those items.
Well, they can. You know, actually, one of your folks made the comment. They said even though shopping has been stopped, life keeps going on, and we've got to stay ahead of those special events that are out there. So now, do that from the comfort of your home. Go onto our website, click onto that shopping button. Look at all the different jewelry. Look at all the cool coins. You don't have to leave your house. We ship Monday through Friday. Every day of the week, we're shipping packages out. So if you want to do some shopping from home, you can do that. We still do have gold and silver bullion in stock. Like I said, we closed over the weekend, but open back up Monday morning. There's a really unusual bar that I have mixed feelings about. It's a struck during the COVID-19 pandemic bar. And the refinery that's making these is going to be donating all of their profits to some, you know, people trying to fight the virus and everything. So very interesting. I have mixed feelings about a silver bar commemorating the pandemic, but it's truly for a good cause. And I think once we've got all this in the rearview mirror and we're looking at it without all the emotions that we have right now, I think a lot of people will be happy if they pick one of those up.
That's sure. It will be that collector's item going forward. All right. So once again, remind folks how to find you in person to do gold and silver and online for everything else.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always call us at 725-1590. If we need to meet you curbside or something like that, we'll do everything we can to accommodate it. Go online to mobilebaycoins.com and click on that shop button and do some shopping from the comfort of your home.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a great weekend and a happy Easter, Sean.
Hey, happy Easter to you. Enjoy your Saturday, for sure. Hey, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. You do not want to miss this. Dr. Lee Irvin joins us. We're going to talk about, I'm going to mess it up, chloroquine and Z-Pak and what it can do and what it might do for people that suffer from COVID-19. It's coming up next.